Om Agnate Mirandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chakshu Samilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sahapandantika Vansa Kapatubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vai Vaja Patitanam Prabhinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. First, the Aristasura was killed by Krishna, and there was a great taking shelter in fear of Krishna. Not in fear of Krishna, but a fear of Aristasura. The devotees in Vrindavan took shelter of Krishna. So was fear their friend or their enemy? It caused them to take shelter of Krishna. Whatever helps us take shelter of Krishna, that is for our great fortune. That is our greatest fortune. Because what else is to be gained in this world other than Krishna's shelter? Everything else we gain, we will lose in time. So Aristasura caused that feeling of distress, and because all the residents of Vrindavan are the greatest devotees, they fully took shelter of Krishna. They fully took shelter of Krishna. It was completely natural for them to take shelter of Krishna. They had no other shelter other than Krishna. They didn't consider anyone else their shelter. It was impossible for them to take shelter of anyone else. Krishna was everything to them. This is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. There's no question of looking anywhere else, and we'll hear about this in a few moments. And then we heard about, after hearing about the residents in Vrindavan and Aristasura, then we hear about Kamsa, who really had a demonic mentality, but he had the one great quality of being absorbed fully in thoughts of Krishna. And that quality ultimately saved him. He was absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And although we don't recommend exactly the path of Kamsa, his mood, but we do recommend, and this is why Narada Muni, first Sukadeva Goswami, and then Narada Muni mentioned this point, that absorption in thoughts of Krishna is everything. It is the path. And we saw this in Srila Prabhupada's life, how absorbed he was in the preaching movement, and he wanted us to be somehow or another absorbed. Somehow or another. What's the verse? Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna parara vindaya. That somehow or another, Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna's service, should absorb our consciousness. Somehow or another. And when we get in the habit of hearing about Krishna, then naturally, hearing about Krishna, chanting Krishna's names, then naturally, our mind becomes more attracted to Krishna. We are tatasta shakti, chetragya kya tatapara, that we are marginal, and we could either go this way towards Maya, or excuse me, well, there's no Maya direction here, this is Govardhan, but we could go towards Giriraj, we could go away from Govardhan. So where is our shelter? What is our consciousness absorbed in? So this is the great mission of life. It's to somehow become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, one way or another. So a natural question is, well, I'm in this situation. I have a job. I have this. I have that. How am I going to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness? It's so different from being here in Govardhan where no one has anything else to do except hear and chant about Krishna. So it's so different. So how will I do it? And the answer is, somehow or another, we should do it. If we see it's urgent, somehow or another, we will do it. Somehow, we will color our life. We will color our life with Krishna consciousness, somehow or another. Either by working and talking to people about Krishna, distributing prasadam to people, or by preaching, or by just even giving the fruits of our work in Krishna's service, so somehow we can connect that work to Krishna. That arupa siddha bhakti is also bhakti. That means when we impose bhakti by offering the fruit, for example, of one's work to Krishna, even though the work itself doesn't have anything to do with Krishna. Somehow or another, it is in our greatest interest to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And then, after Kamsa had been dispatched and he had called for Akura, the next demon that was killed was Keshi demon. And just as Aristasura was thrown 18 steps away, Jiva Goswami said that Krishna kicked him 18 times. It's so interesting how when Mother Diti heard that her sons were going to be the greatest demons, but then she heard they're going to be such great demons that they're going to be killed by Krishna. She was overjoyed, not because they were demons, but because what could be a more fortunate death? She thought, somehow be touched by Krishna. So Keshi was touched by Krishna. He was touched by Krishna's lotus hand, that comment by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur when Keshi is rushing towards him with his open mouth and Krishna says, oh, you look like you're trying to eat something. Well, then eat this. And he puts his thumb up and he inserts his whole arm in Keshi's mouth and chokes him. It's so blessed. But there are better ways to get free from one's the unfortunate parts of one's nature other than being killed by Krishna. And the recommended process in this age is, of course, to chant Krishna's names and hear about Krishna. And then after that, and from Keshi, what do we learn? What do we learn from Keshi's death? Huh? But what do we learn? What was the point? From there was the absorption of Kamsa, the Aristasura, that we learned about taking shelter from Keshi, and then from Narada Muni, him speaking to Krishna, and Krishna not wanting to leave Braja. He, the all-powerful Supreme Lord, was caught in Braja by the love of the residents of Braja. So how powerful. There's one verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Aishwarya Madhurya Krunye Sarupa Purnata. That Krishna's sarup, it is full of Aishwarya, or his form, his very being. Who he is sweetness and his incredible potencies, power. But Sarupa Purnata Bhaktivatsalya, his quality of Bhaktivatsalya, where he loves his devotee, where he's controlled by his devotee, that he leans towards his devotee. This is his greatest quality. Atma Pajanta Vadanyata. He will give himself to his devotee. The Supreme Lord is not a dictator. He's not sitting on the throne and no. In all the shastras it says he's so soft, actually. But when we're under the laws of material nature, because we are hard, the laws of material nature treat us in a hard way. But Krishna himself, he is very kind, and he reciprocates. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maya tateshu chapyaham. That Krishna, he comes, is neutral, but he comes alive for the devotees, so to speak. He's always there. He's everywhere. But for the devotees, he actively participates in their life. He actively participates in each and every one of our lives. This is astounding. He can do it. So he's controlled by the affection of his devotees. And then yesterday we heard about the example that Akura made on his way to Braja. He was going to Braja, as perhaps we are all on that road to Vrindavan. And if one wants to gain the service of Krishna in Vrindavan, one has to at some point become more absorbed in just what Akura was absorbed in. This is what is to be gained by every living entity, every embodied soul. They have britya, ihan, arta. That which is to be gained is to gain the ecstasy that Akura felt. He gave up all pride, all fear. And he gave up all lamentation. That means our freedom is now to become absorbed in Shravanadibi, continuously, somehow absorbed in kirtan, in hearing, in chanting, in Krishna consciousness. Everyone can do it at any moment. Think of Krishna. Say Krishna's names. Think of the form of Krishna. At any moment, at every moment, theoretically, we can do this. I say theoretically because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, although we may want to chant continuously as long as the lower modes of material nature, passion and ignorance, infect our consciousness, we will not be able to do it. So therefore, the Krishna conscious lifestyle is based on sattva-gun, goodness, to make the consciousness cool so it can become, so it's more pliable, flexible. We can apply our consciousness where we desire, and where we desire to place it is at the lotus feet of Krishna in a mood of serving, servitude. So today, we'll just chant for a few minutes. For 10 minutes, and you can open up the door now. It's just hard when you're speaking, and maybe the where the seat should be placed. Prabhu. Sham Sham. Such a nice name. No, Betty. Where the seat should be placed is not right in front of the door, because otherwise all your energy goes out the door, and with the people are always, it's okay. Thank you. Okay, well, lock it again in a few minutes. Not only are we locking people out, we're locking everyone in. There'll be no escapees from this class. Okay, so try to take some of those principles that we've been discussing. And if we and we can't lose if we try to place our consciousness on Krishna while we're chanting, if we in relationship, because even if our mind is jumping all over the universe, then at least we can become humble and pray to Krishna, I need your help, just see my condition. My mind is worse than a grasshopper. Okay, so just try and chant Krishna's holy names, become absorbed. If you can appreciate Krishna, if you can chant with some affection for Krishna, that is still more wonderful. Okay. Hare Krishna. The last points we had heard were of Akura's entry into Vrindavan, thinking of Krishna constantly with great devotion in his dasya bhav, his mood of servitorship, and just thinking humbly that I don't deserve this to be able to see Krishna. And yet, amazingly enough, by the mercy of Kamsa, by his order, I'm going to see Krishna today, although I am not deserving of it all. And then he meditated on Krishna's feet and his form and Krishna's activities and how he would see Krishna and what he would do and how Krishna would greet him, because he was Krishna's uncle. And then, while this was growing in him so intensely, the thought, the anticipation of seeing Krishna, then he saw Krishna's footprints and fell to the ground. It was completely natural, because his love was boiling over already. So when the first symptom of Krishna's presence, actual presence, was there in the soft dust of Braja, immediately his ecstasy ignited and he fell to the ground. And then he saw Krishna, and Krishna and Balaram took him to their house. What a scene that he saw! How amazing it was. Krishna and Balaram's effulgent forms. He had wanted to pay his obeisances to every cowherd boy, to all the cows, practically speaking, because he saw them as completely spiritual entities and as associates of Krishna. So then the pastime goes on, and what we didn't speak about, Jagatrini Mataji did speak about how Krishna left Vrindavan, and then Krishna killed Kamsa, and he killed the wrestlers, and then he married his first wife, Rukmini, and then he, just as Narada had predicted, everything that Narada had said, plus still more, occurred. And then he married 16,100 wives, plus the Rukmini and Satyabhama, Jambavati, Kalindi, Mitravinda, Satya, Bhadra, Lakshmana. Does anyone know the name of the chief queen aside from the eight chief queens? Does anyone know the name? Rohini, yes. Yes, thank you. It was also Rohini. Her name was also Rohini. So Krishna did that, and he killed Narakasura, and he killed Banasura, and he had an unlimited family of Yadus, and then Sudama Brahmana visited him. What a touching story, and how they remembered their childhood days. Krishna had not forgotten his friend Sudama. And then described in the Bhagavatam, and the order of the Bhagavatam, not just the exact occurrences. Then Krishna went to Kurukshetra, and then finally Krishna's pastimes are summarized in the in one verse in the 90th chapter of the 10th canto, and then the 11th canto begins. And in the 11th canto, in the first chapter, the seed of Krishna's departure from this world is planted. Some of the young Yarus go to Pindaraka, where some sages, after having performed the sacrifice for Vasudeva in Vasudeva's home, these sages were there, including Narada Muni, Vyasadeva, and the boys wanted to play a trick on the sages, so they took Samba, who was a very beautiful son of Krishna, whose mother was Jambavati, and his name was Samba, Sa-Amba. He was always with his mother. And he was very beautiful, and they took him and they put a pillow beneath his they put a sari around him, and they put the sari very shyly like this, and they said, "Oh, he's too shy to speak in front of you, great sages, but she wants to know, because if he would speak, his man's voice would be heard." So they were very, very clever. And they said, he wants to know whether his child is going to be a boy or a girl. And this is an old astrological trick. What the astrologer does, he gives, when you ask an astrologer, is it going to be a boy or a girl, he writes boy down in an envelope, and he gives it to one of his friends. And then, in nine months, and he tells the person it's going to be a girl. And then, in 9 months, it comes out a boy. The child comes out a boy. And he said, "Actually, I was just telling you at that time it was a girl, but I made this envelope on that date. You look in the envelope and you'll see what I actually was predicting." And if it's a girl, of course, he doesn't point to the envelope. But so the astrologers are tricky and the people who ask the questions are tricky. But these were not astrologers. They were sages. And they saw through this trick, insulting trick, making fun of them. And they said, "What you will give birth to is that which will destroy your entire dynasty." And later they picked up the cloth and they saw an iron club. And without telling Krishna, in fear, they went to Ugrasena and told him the whole story. And he said, "Don't worry. We won't tell Krishna. We'll just destroy the club." So they ground and ground the club up until there was nothing left except the piece that is required to hold it as you're grinding it. And they threw the little pieces. What are they called, the little pieces again? The filings, yes. They threw the filings in that little piece in the ocean. And then there's some chapters 2, 3, 4, and 5 where Narada Muni answers Vasudeva. It's very, very interesting. The 11th canto, he's talking about, Vasudeva asked Narada Muni, "I've wasted my life. Here I am. I'm older now, and I haven't sought liberation." It's so funny in the sense, because he has Krishna as his son and he loves Krishna full-heartedly. And he's thinking like this, like an ordinary person. So Narada Muni preaches to him for some. And then after that, Uddhava. And then after that, rather, there are ill omens manifest in Dwarka. And when Krishna sees these ill omens, he says to all the citizens, "These inauspicious events that will hit us can only be counteracted if we go to Prabhakshetra and we perform sacrifices there and appease the Brahmanas." Let us go immediately. So all the Yadus listening to Krishna, they got in their chariots, they yoked the horses, and Uddhava, who was so intelligent, was watching this. And he thought that now I can tell these ill omens are occurring in Dwarka, but nothing inauspicious can occur in Dwarka unless Krishna has allowed it to occur in Dwarka. So from these inauspicious elements and from Krishna allowing them to occur, I can understand that Krishna is now going to withdraw his pastimes from this world. He's going to depart. Uddhava went to where Krishna was in his private quarters, and he said, Krishna, I think it's time for your disappearance pastimes now. But, O Lord, I cannot tolerate being separate from you for even a moment. Please, if you are leaving this world, please take me with you. I do not want to stay here alive with you already gone from this world. I cannot tolerate being apart from you. So Krishna said, yes, it is time for me to depart. And what I want you to do is wander throughout this world, detached from everything in this world. And this is the beginning of the Uddhava Gita, where Krishna instructs Uddhava in somewhat a different way than Krishna instructed Arjuna. The conclusions are somewhat the same, but in every chapter directly of the Uddhava Gita where the Krishna is describing, he's summarizing the entire Vedic culture. But in every chapter, whether he's talking about Varnashrama Dharma, Karma, or Jnana, or Yoga, he directly says that the perfection of that process is to find me. So, in the seventh chapter, in response to Uddhava's question, Krishna explains the 25 gurus by the Dattatreya, the Avadhuta Brahmana, how one can progress to some degree in spiritual life just by using one's detached intelligence. And then he describes in the 10th chapter, I believe, Varnashrama, in the 11th chapter, Jnana Yoga. And then, after the 11th chapter, of course, comes the 12th chapter. And in the 12th chapter, Krishna begins to describe, he describes first karma, performing the Vedic rituals, and ultimately not for the purpose of gaining heavenly sense pleasures in any way, but ultimately to find me. And then he explains the Jnana Yoga, that ultimately when one understands true knowledge, one will find me. And then he's going to describe bhakti in the 12th chapter. And in this 12th chapter, he describes the cause of bhakti. That's how he begins. And the cause of bhakti is the association of devotees. So then, he's describing different kinds of association. First, he describes that so many different types of living beings, some of them were animals and animal bodies, some were demons, some were kings, some were this, some were that, but they all achieve perfection by this process of associating with devotees. And he describes the different qualities of devotees. And then he describes the Brijbasis, that quality of devotees, in the frame of reference of describing the potency of devotees. And then he describes these topmost devotees, the Brijbasis. Now this conversation, Krishna left Vrindavan approximately when he was 10 years old. And Krishna lived in this world. His lotus feet graced this planet, touched Mother Earth for another 115 years. That means 125 summers or winters had passed. And now, 125 years after Krishna had left Vrindavan, he's speaking to Uddhava, and he thinks about the Brijbasis, explaining the qualities of devotees. And then, in the words of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the burning tears of love for the Braja Gopis, which were deeply suppressed in Krishna's heart, suddenly burst forth. And he begins to speak about the gopis. Thus, especially this part, there are other parts, but especially this part of the Uddhava Gita, which goes until the 29th chapter of the 11th canto, and the 30th and the 31st chapter of the 11th canto describe the actual Mausala Lila of Krishna, the disappearance pastimes of Krishna. But in this 12th chapter is the most intimate points that he's going to make. He's going to describe the Braja Gopis. And 125 years after he's left Vrindavan, he's remembering them. And in four verses, he describes them. Now, what qualities, characteristics, activities of the gopis is he going to place in these four verses? What qualities does he remember, come to his mind when his love for the gopis is bursting forward? What is he going to remember specifically about them? So now we'll hear that. And not only will we hear about the most exalted Braja Gopis by Krishna's description, we will hear of those qualities in such a way that we know what it will take and what we have to cultivate if we want to raise ourselves to this platform. Because we heard the activities of the residents of Vrindavan at the beginning of the, this is so much of what we've been hearing during our 5 days together here. So what is Krishna's vision of all this? And what is actually has captured his heart, his consciousness, that causes him to remember these topmost of all the devotees, the gopis? So we'll hear those four verses now. And we'll hear even how we can apply these principles to our own life, should we wish to move forward on the path to Vrindavan. Because we've been speaking about how to attract the attention of Krishna, so these verses will explain what Krishna is remembering when his attention has been attracted by these great devotees. So 100 years, over 100 years after leaving Vrindavan, Krishna remembers the gopis while speaking to Uddhava. And what does Krishna specifically remember about them? If you want to characterize a great person that you've met, but you only have four sentences to do it, which qualities will you pick? Which qualities are so outstanding in your mind that you would choose them to describe that beloved friend of yours? So this is what Krishna remembers. Here's the first one. Ramena sadam maturam pranite. Everyone, please. Ramena sadam maturam pranite. With Rama, Ramena, with Rama, when brought from Mathura, Salfalkina Maya Anurakta Chit.
Sita
Sa Falkina Maya Anuraktiti. When I was brought from the city to the city of Mathura by Safalka, that's Akrura. Now he's going to describe the gopis. Mai Anurakta Chitta, those whose consciousness, the chitta, was anurakta, constantly, completely attached to me, mai, to myself. Vigadda bhavena name vyoga. It was extremely deep. Vigadda bhavena name vyoga. Everyone. Tivradayo anyam didrishu sukaya. So when I was taken away from them, and vyoga means separation. Yoga means the yukta connection, and vyoga means separation. So they had their anurakta chitta, their consciousness was so attached to me completely. What does complete attachment to someone mean? We cannot experience this in the material world at all. Everything in the material world is vitiated, it is weak. Complete attachment for me. But then, when there was vyoga, just imagine complete love for someone, and then there is separation. And tivradeo, such powerful suffering came from that. Unlimited suffering came from that, on using words to describe it. But anyam didrashu sukaya, they did not look anywhere else for their happiness. Anya, another place, sukaya. They did not look anywhere else for their happiness. They had complete attachment for me, and I left. And their attachment for me remained constant, complete, and ever-increasing, practically speaking. This is what Krishna remembers. And this is where I fall short, for in one of many ways. Because when I don't get what I want, my mind, like a fickle child, turns in a different direction. But the Brijbasis, the gopis, they were not like that. And here's the translation. The residents of Vrindavan, headed by the gopis, were always completely attached to me with deepest love. Complete deepest love. Therefore, when my uncle Akrura brought my brother Balaram and me to the city of Mathura, the residents of Vrindavan suffered extreme mental distress. The blinking of their eyes would cause them distress because they could not see Krishna for a moment, and then Krishna left. And because of separation from me, because of that distress, and they could not find any other source of happiness. They did not look, and therefore they did not find. This is love. Love by definition is loyal and chaste. It is not fickle. Chanchanam hi mana Krishna. That is in the material world, the flickering nature of the mind. I want this, then I want that. And the material mind's nature is that when it focuses on something,
that one thing appears to be to have everything. It takes over the mind. And it's the only thing that exists. But then the nature of the material mind, 1 second later, it can reject that very same thing and focus on someone else, something else, anything else. And that's the business of advertising. It places something in our mind to make it appealing. And the mind goes, I want. That's the nature of the mind. But the gopis had transcendental minds. Their minds had completely embraced Krishna, and they did not let him go for one moment, one half a moment, one namesa, the blinking of an eye, the twinkling of an eye. So this quality of the residents of Vrindavan of Krishna, he remembered that. If we want to be there, we have to develop our love, our attachment. And we have to be focused in this way. Not we have to, but if we so want to gain the result, we have to fall in love with Krishna fully. The quality is full attachment to Krishna. This is what Krishna remembered. They were fully attached to me. When someone is fully attached to you, even the hardest heart will melt. What to speak of the softest heart? We want to develop our attraction and attachment to Krishna. Yayetamam prapadyante. Krishna is attached to everyone, but someone who is attached to him, he reciprocates accordingly, even more. We want to develop our attachment for Krishna. The second verse. Tasta tapas prishtatamena nita. Maya eva vrindavana gocharena. Chanardavata punarangatasam. Hina maya kalpasama babuvu. The gopis had spent nights with their dearest beloved. And those nights, even though they were the length of the night of Lord Brahma, millions of years, they appeared to be just like one moment. It was not enough. It was millions of years and they weren't tired, they weren't bored. They just wanted more and more and more of Krishna's association. When it was over, what happened? This dream of being with Krishna was insufficient, just a moment's worth. And for the gopis, he calls Uddhava Anga. Anga means, you are like my own limb. I have so much affection. Therefore, you're like my own self. My dear Uddhava, therefore I'm revealing to you what is most secret to me. And these gopis, tasham, hinamaya, without me, kalpa, a day of Brahma, 4,320,000,000 years, sama, babuva. Even a moment without me appeared to last forever. A million billion years with me passed quickly. A moment without me stretched on forever. This is Mahabhava, the Mahabhava of the gopis. The prior verse of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it's anuraga, on the 6 stages of prema bhakti. Anuraga, complete attachment to Krishna. Raga means the coloring of one's whole consciousness. It's colored with love for Krishna. And here, it is so extreme that without being with Krishna for a moment, it appears unlimited agony. Because the principle here, we'll read the verse. Dear Uddhava, all of those nights that the gopis spent with me, their most dearly beloved in the land of Vrindavana, seemed to them to pass in less than a moment. Bereft of my association, however, the gopis felt that those same nights dragged on forever, as if each night were equal to a day of Brahma. And Krishna is saying this after being out of Vrindavan for 110 years, and he knew that the gopis had suffered mental anguish. Only, of course, in that mental anguish, we'll speak about that in a moment, Krishna is there fully with them. This separation mood, this virabhav taught by Mahaprabhu, taught that we should not imitate, we can't imitate, but that mood of developing a longing to be with Krishna is the channel that the residents of Vrindavan used to open up the uppercut realm, the spiritual realm where the pastimes were going on. This is described in Bhakti, one of the Sandarbhas. Like a channel, missing Krishna, wanting to be with Krishna, not being able to tolerate being separate from Krishna, is the channel that opens up the spiritual world to our perception. And it begins, how the question naturally asks is, well, I don't know Krishna. Well, how can I therefore miss him? What to speak of long for him? What to speak of ardently long for him? And the answer is, we have to get to know Krishna, obviously. We have to taste the sweetness. And at the very end, we will say something about the process of doing this, which is really what this whole retreat is about, obviously. It's about getting a different taste in our consciousness and then seeing which is our preferred taste. What do we want to cultivate? Do we want to cultivate the sweet taste of Krishna consciousness, or do we want to cultivate the very frustrating happiness in the material realm that is can only be compared to the taste of a handful of ashes, or which isn't very tasty. It's just dry. It is the advertising. The mind grasps onto something and thinks, oh yes, I'm going to enjoy it. It looks so tasty. I'm imagining it's going to be so tasty. And then when I grab it and try and put it in my mouth, it's ashes, just ashes again. I've been tricked again. And the materialistic comes so within us. He says, well, okay, that one wasn't, but the next one will be, and the next one, or the next one, but it's ashes again and again and again. So this one of the nights of the gopis is that there was only one thing that they valued, and that was Krishna's association. They had complete attachment to Krishna, and this is what Krishna is remembering. They valued, nothing else had any value to them other than Krishna's association. And they'd give anything for Krishna's association, or they'd give up anything for Krishna's association. We can't imitate, of course, because what happens is on some sentiment, someone will go, oh, yes, Krishna. And then,
So we don't want that. What we have to do is find a steady place so that we can find our own place, our own natural place with no pretension, no pretending, but yet take to the process very clearly of moving forward. They valued only Krishna's association. That was their taste. We want to cultivate that taste. The third verse. Now this one's a special one too. Tanaviddham mayana sangabaddha. Diyaswamatmanam madastatedam. Yata samada munayo abditoye. Nadya pravishta iva namarupe. These words, anusangabada, because of the sangha, because of Krishna's sangha, because they were with Krishna continuously in their consciousness, whether they were with him physically and were with him and thinking about him, or were separated from him and were completely absorbed in longing to be with him. Anusangabaddha means they were bound up by that intimate contact, either yoga or viyoga, meeting or separation. Their consciousness was so bound up in thoughts of Krishna, so much absorbed in Krishna, that Dear Swam Atmanam Adas Tatedam, they couldn't tell. They couldn't even think about their own bodies. They couldn't see what was near. They couldn't see what was far. They were just absorbed in this intimate relationship with Krishna. And then Krishna himself gives an example. And that example is Yata Samadau Munayo, the great sages who are impersonalists even. They're sitting, withdrawing their consciousness from the external world and quietening their minds and become absorbed in jnana, in consciousness, to the degree that they lose perception. They lose perception of themselves. Like Nadya, a river, Pravishta, Ivanama Rupe. Just like rivers enter into the ocean and lose their individual riverness. And just like yogis in their munis, yogis in their meditative trance, having perfected Sayuja Mukti, practically speaking, absorb their consciousness and forget everything else, or not even forget, lose awareness of everything else. Similarly, the gopis, due to their intimate, continuous, intimate contact with Krishna, only thought of Krishna, and everywhere they looked, they only saw Krishna in everything, in themselves. They saw themselves in relationship with Krishna. Ishtadeva Spurti. They saw everything as Krishna's, as manifested from Krishna. They did not see any duality in anywhere in existence. They saw Krishna everywhere. And this, in a not impersonal sense, but a personal sense, is the main topic, more or less, of the whole Uddhava Gita, that there is nothing separate from Krishna. Everything is his energy. It's Krishna's. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Varagya, you should say. And it should be used in Krishna's service. But one has to have this kind of a absorption
a loving anurakta, anusanga, intimate association with Krishna. The gopis were anusanga bandha. They were bound up by their loving relationship with Krishna, because Krishna had attracted their consciousness fully. They could not but think of his smile, his eyes, his curling hair. What to speak of the sound of his flute that had stolen away their hearts and stolen away by his glance. His glance had entered their hearts and cleaned out the treasure house of their hearts until there was nothing left but his presence. This is what Krishna is remembering. Their full absorption in him. So it's not that Krishna was cold or hard or even left them on a true tattva level, but it is because of the rasa level of him leaving that they were always associating with him, by thinking of him constantly, by interacting with him constantly, because they were bound by him due to their love for him. And this is what Krishna remembers. There's something I could read by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment on this verse. By his amazing pastimes, Krishna stunned all the three worlds. By his constant association, with great strength, he bound up the gopis. The functions of their intelligence became like desire cows, kamadhenus, for fulfilling Krishna's desire. Their intelligence, their minds, their senses completely existed to fulfill Krishna's desires, and they were thinking only of Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And they did not even know their own bodies. In going to the rasa dance, they did not know where they were, where they had come from. Krishna's flute sound had pulled them, intoxicated them, like the most powerful of intoxicants, and pulled them from that. They could not resist. This was the quality of their love. They were not aware of this world. They were not aware of the next world. They weren't thinking, oh, we have gone against religiosity by leaving our husbands. They were only aware of Krishna. They were like sages in samadhi. The sages in this state, experiencing Brahman, remember nothing. But the gopis, Krishna says, because it's Krishna himself who's speaking here, they experienced me, not Brahman. Seeing a husband or seeing sons, even if they have no good qualities, brings more happiness. When one sees one's beloved, it brings more happiness than even seeing the moon, which is full of so many good qualities. And what is the cause of this? Vishwanath says, it is because of mamata, the feeling of this is mine, possessiveness. One is more possessive of husband and sons than of the moon. Then what to speak, if that brings us happiness, with a person who we have an ordinary relationship with in this world, or our car, or our whatever. What to speak of the bliss if one is unlimitedly possessive of Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, who gives unlimited bliss by his very nature and is decorated with all good qualities.
And this sense of possessiveness, says Vishwanath, is the cause of the greatest bliss for the devotees. There is aham mamiti, that the sense of I and mine, as Prabhupada describes, or as Sukadeva describes in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. And we are supposed to give up the sense that I, who is I, and what is mine, I am my body, and what is connected to my body is mine. That is to be given up and replaced with, who am I? I am Krishna's, and Krishna is mine. In the beginning, we have to practice, I am Krishna's. Who am I? I am Krishna's servant. But in a progressed stage, then it is more the mamata, that Krishna is mine. And this is the specific quality of the relationship that the residents of Vrindavan have with Krishna. He's ours. He's our village friend. We grew up in the same village as him. He's our boy. And in one rasa or another, we love him. He's ours. We're proud of him. He kills a demon. We're proud of him. But we cannot tolerate the slightest separation from him. Here's the translation. My dear Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization like rivers merging into the ocean and are not thus aware of material names and forms, similarly, the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds that they could not think of their own bodies or of this world or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me, complete absorption in Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. We saw this in Prabhupada, in his desire to serve Krishna. And he would do anything for Krishna, anything. He was so bold, and whatever was required in the service of Krishna, he would do, and he did do. He was so brave. He was so attached and absorbed. And he saw no duality. Bhayam dvitiya. There is no duality. The duality comes in illusion, vipariyato smriti, when we turn from Krishna. But this takes, of course, advanced consciousness. And here's the quality we extracted from this: full absorption with great attachment in thoughts of Krishna. Full absorption with great attachment in thoughts of Krishna. And the final verse, again, remember, this is what has made its way so deeply into Krishna's thoughts, into his thoughts, into his heart, the qualities of the gopis, that after 110 years, this is what he's remembering. So please repeat after me. Matkama Ramanam Jaram Asvarupa Vido Abala Brahmam Paramam Prapo Sangachatta Sahasrasaha. So this verse describes the process that the gopis used to attain Krishna. They were asrupa vidu. They did not actually even know Krishna's position. They knew Krishna's position, but they didn't care about Krishna's position. It sometimes came to their consciousness, but the love for him, the love for him that they were experiencing sent that awareness down below their conscious level because it interfered with their madhurya, the sweetness of their loving relationship with him. So powerful was their love. When Krishna, after killing Kamsa, he freed Vasudeva and Devaki from prison. And they had seen him so many years before, 10 years before, and they had seen him in a forearm form, and Mother Devaki requested him, please, her consciousness was mixed with her parental motherly love. My dear boy, if you don't change into a two-armed form, immediately Kamsa's going to know that you are Vishnu and he'll kill you. So she had knowledge of his Aishwarya, and it was mixed together with knowledge that he's my son. It didn't make any sense exactly. And then she hadn't seen him, but Vasudeva had seen that forearm form, and Mother Devaki had seen the forearm form. So when Krishna released them from prison, from the shackles, then they stood before Krishna. And on one hand, they just wanted to embrace him. And on the other hand, he was the Supreme Lord. They wanted to touch his feet. And not knowing which one to do, they just stood. They were stunned in the ecstasy of my son is the Supreme Lord. It wasn't a contradiction in their consciousness, but they weren't sure how to deal with that Supreme Lord Krishna who was standing in front of them. And then, because it was such an embarrassing situation, because Krishna was there and they were stunned and wouldn't move. So Krishna's yoga maya took control of the situation and increased their love for Krishna. So their consciousness of his power diminish, and then Krishna bowed down and touched their feet, and they held him, his body that was so soft. He killed the hard wrestlers, but his body was so soft, and they smelled his head. After so many years, they just exchanged this type of loving affection with him. But Mother Yashoda, on the other hand, Mother Yashoda's love is considered still greater because she had already in the early two chapters in a row it's described in the Bhagavatam. Krishna opens his mouth. One time she was looking inside his mouth to see if teeth were coming. And she innocently opens and says, Krishna, open your mouth so I can see. And she looks inside and she sees universes. And then in the very next chapter, in the eighth chapter, that was the seventh chapter, in the eighth chapter of the tenth canto, which is an amazing, amazing chapter of Krishna's Vatsalya Leelas. But Krishna is eating dirt and the boys are complaining about Krishna because Mother Yashoda tells them if he does anything naughty again because he's been stealing butter, so please immediately tell me. So Balaram and the boys come and Krishna's been eating dirt. Mother Yashoda says, have you been eating dirt? Your brother Balaram and the other boys are saying you've eaten dirt.
Mother, I've never eaten dirt.
But Balaram and the boys have Balaram because they were stealing sweets and they wanted me to eat it. And I told them that I would not eat anything stolen. And therefore, they were afraid I was going to tell on them. So they made up this story to get me in trouble. And then Krishna ultimately, then if you have not eaten any dirt, open your mouth. So Mother Yashoda looked in the mouth. And Krishna, at that time, he was lying. Why does a young boy lie like that? Because he's afraid. So Krishna was afraid of Mother Yashoda. He actually was afraid of Mother Yashoda. And he didn't know what to do because he had eaten dirt. He had done it. And he was going to get punished. And Krishna wasn't afraid of anyone. But he was afraid of Mother Yashoda. So immediately, Krishna was thinking, oh, I don't want to get punished. And then, because he has a satya sankalpa, whatever he desires must come to pass. He has that potency. So that evoked Krishna's Aishwarya Shakti to protect him. And then Krishna's Aishwarya Shakti manifested. It wasn't Krishna who actually did it exactly. His potencies began to work in his service. So then, when Mother Yashoda looked in his mouth, she saw the universes in his belly, his abdomen. And she became bewildered, but ultimately nothing could disturb her love for him. So the gopis, when Krishna leaves them in the rasa dance, they say, you are the super soul. When Krishna, when they're talking about Krishna to Uddhav, they say in his last birth he was cruel to Bali, to poor Bali Maharaj. He cheated Bali Maharaj. He said to cheater, this, that. But they were talking about his previous births as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They knew who he was, but their Madhurya relationship with him had completely covered that. So they knew him, Aswarupa Vidu, not as the Supreme Lord, but they saw him as Ramanam Jara, their lover. And yet, Sangha Chata Sahasrama Rasaha, they achieved him in the completely and fully. They achieved the supreme result, not by their knowledge, but by their pure love for him. So Krishna is remembering that. Here is the verse. All those hundreds and thousands of gopis. And it's interesting to note that there were hundreds and thousands of gopis, and Krishna was reciprocating with each of them. There were asankhya calves, means unlimited calves, and Krishna was reciprocating. Krishna can reciprocate with unlimited persons, so there is room for us. So all those hundreds and thousands of gopis understanding me to be their most charming lover and ardently desiring me in that way were unaware of my actual position. Yet, intimately associating with me, the gopis attained me, the Supreme Absolute Truth, by the nature of their loving relationship with Krishna. So the principle was the strength of their love for Krishna caused their attainment of him. Now, we hear the verses spoken by Krishna glorifying the gopis, and he's remembering them after so long, and these qualities that they have are so much in his heart, they burst forward out of his mouth. But, and yes, we can cultivate these qualities. From now on, I'm going to develop my affection for Krishna. From now on, I'm going to develop my attachment to Krishna. From now on, this, and from now on, that. But here I am, with a heart that's like a desert, and I have this strange taste for ashes, and I try again and again to get some rust, some sweetness, some taste from that which has no taste. So what can I do? From whatever position I'm in, what can I do? I found something that answered this question. What to do? There's a few verses. One at the end of the sixth chapter of the 10th canto, where Krishna kills Putana. In the final verse, Srila Sukadev Goswami says to Maharaj Prickett, the last part is, Srinuyat Shradaya Martyo Govinde Labate Ratim. Ratim means a taste. Labate means gain. Govinda, by hearing and remembering with faith, any person can attain rati, a taste. And if we have a taste for this, for the spiritual, for our relationship with Krishna, if we can somehow get that taste, and actually in one of Prabhupada's purports in one of the early cantos of the Bhagavatam, he says that the taste is the bhakti lata bija. We want to get this taste. It is the seed that will grow into the plant, the tree, that will blossom into the fruit of prema, of love for Krishna. And it begins with a taste. I want this. I like this taste. So Govinde Labate Ratim, that taste comes for the Supreme Lord who hears about him with faith in it, with faith and devotion. So here is the verse in the final verse in the sixth chapter, and then there are three other verses we'll read that explain it even more. Any person, raise your hand if you are in the category of a person, an in person. Yes, even me. Any person who hears with faith and devotion about how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, speaking about one pastime, and who thus invests, people like to make investments, well, this is the best investment, who thus invests his hearing in such childhood pastimes of Krishna, certainly attains attachment for Govinda, the Supreme Original Person. That's Srila Prabhupada's translation. And then there are three verses that follow this one in the seventh chapter, and I'll just read those. The next chapter. So King Parikit, he said, "My Lord, O Sukadev Goswami, all the various activities exhibited by the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly pleasing to the ear and to the mind. Simply by one's hearing of these activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord. But Krishna's childhood activities are so attractive that they are automatically pleasing to the ear, to the mind and ear. Thus, one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, vanishes. And one gradually develops devotional service to the Supreme Lord, an attachment for him, and friendship with devotees who give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Sri Parikit Maharaj, so soon, so close to the time of his departure from this world, says, if you think it's fit, if you think it's suitable, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord. Please describe other pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality, who appeared on this planet Earth, imitating a human child and performing wonderful activities like killing Putana."
I would like to read that one more time, though. Let's see if we can make the magic machine do what we want it to do for a change. Yes. Could you, Brother Raman, do you have a harmonium before your eyes? King Parikit said, "My Lord, Sukadev Goswami, all the various activities exhibited by the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly pleasing to the ear and to the mind. Simply by one's hearing of these activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord. But Krishna's childhood activities are so attractive that they are automatically pleasing to the mind and ear. Thus, one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, vanishes. And one gradually develops devotional service to the Supreme Lord, and then attachment for Him, and friendship with devotees who give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord. Please describe other pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality, who appeared on this planet Earth, imitating a human child and performing wonderful activities like killing Putana." So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on that final verse in the 12th, in the 11th canto. He says, "Krishna has left us many wonderful narrations about Him. And simply by reading these narrations as they are described," oh, this is from the purport, "as described by the Supreme Personality of in the Krishna book, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can gain salvation from this material world and gradually develops attachment to and devotion for Govinda, the Adi Purusha." So this is the end of my presentation, and although we spoke about many pastimes of Krishna, and we spoke about, we were trying to be also practical to bring the contents of those pastimes into practical focus that we can actually make the attempt to apply to our own chanting, something that we do each and every day. If we can be conscious of these principles, then we can apply them and attain wonderful results. And then finally, here, hearing about the what Krishna remembers when he thinks about the resonance of Vrindavan and specifically the gopis, we can perhaps develop a humble desire to also act in such a way that Krishna remembers us, that his merciful glance falls upon us. And how can we develop this kind of attachment? Maharaj Parikit and Sukadev both speak this. It's said so many times in the Bhagavatam. This is the message of the Bhagavatam. Please, please hear about Krishna. Hear Lila Katha Rasana Sevana. It's practically the last instruction that Sukadev Goswami gives to Maharaj Parikit. Relish this rasa. Serve this taste of the Lila Katha of the pastimes of Krishna. Become attached to Krishna in this way, and everything will develop from that. So if through hearing the very wonderful and powerful classes of Madhavananda Prabhu and Adi Purusha Prabhu and our Satchinandana Maharaj and Jagtrini Mataji, and the pastimes that we heard about from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam that I have presented, if we will all be so satisfied if your taste for hearing about Krishna develops by the process of hearing. So please take that home with you to wherever you go throughout the world, and you'll satisfy all your grateful teachers. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. So there's still Hare Krishna. For 10 minutes, why don't you find someone very close to you, one or two people very close to you, and just talk about some of the things that you have heard either in this class or in the previous classes or anything in any of the classes that you have heard that has struck you deeply and sticks in your consciousness. Please, we'll take 10 minutes to do this type of speaking to each other. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for your enthusiastic hearing.